All right, great questions. And your father said not to do that. Well, honoring your parents is one interpersonal mitzvah, and now we have the opportunity to learn about a few more. And tonight we're going to do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, which I saw named beautifully in this book that I was trying to remember the name of last week, the Medicine of Kindness. I thought that was a nice framing
medicine
for it.
Medicine
of Kindness. Because we're learning about all the interpersonal mitzvot that fall under the category of chesed, of general, just doing good for others. And I had this book that I based a lot of last week's class and this class on called Divine Footsteps, Chesed and the Jewish Soul by Rabbi Daniel Feldman. It's an excellent book, so if anyone's interested in learning more, I recommend it. There's a 40-page chapter on tonight's topic with lots of footnotes, and if you're interested, there's much more learning that can be done. Before we get to the specific sources, I wanted to just pause and kind of give you my spiel. I did a spiel last time also on Bikur Cholim, on visiting the sick, and on this would equally apply to comforting mourners. You can actually see there's a really professional-looking diagram at this worksheet here that I got from an article that I read at this, wow, it's going on 6 years ago. I found this article, and I assume one of the authors is Jewish, Barry Goldman. There was not a single Torah source quoted in this, but in terms of describing what the Torah's ethos is around doing mitzvot of chesed, I think this marks the spot. Here's my kind of concern. I think human beings, we all have a need to be needed. We all have this kind of inner desire that we want people to think that we're helping them. As a rabbi, I think like 85 to 90% of rabbis go into the business because we have an extra large portion of that inside of us. And there's something really beautiful about it and also really dangerous about that need to be needed. Because we end up doing mitzvot and we convince ourselves that we're doing it for the other person's benefit when really it's all about us. I know that when I still think about this, when I was sitting Shiva, there were people who were like, I'd either say they were annoying / hurtful, and some of it was subtle, right? Some of it was people who just couldn't get the cue of when it was time to go. And when you're sitting Shiva, right, you can be absolutely exhausted emotionally, physically, right? And like, it was just so odd. Why is this person not leaving? Don't they see that I'm like closing my eyes and I'm yawning? Like, so either there's like some people who don't have that kind of ability to sense other people's nonverbal cues, but also sometimes people are so invested in needing to be the hero that they actually don't care for the needs of the person with whom they're with. And that brings me to this article called How Not to Say the Wrong Thing. The article was very, I haven't read it in years, but I went back and took this graphic. I think it was about a family that had gone through a trauma and how they dealt with the people who were reaching out afterwards. And they decided to create a really simple image for people to think about, and to think about trauma as a series of concentric circles. It's starting from the closest in and then out. You can see how they labeled it here, right? Like the smallest circle is the aggrieved or afflicted, right? And then outside of that is another next circle of significant other, parent, sis, I assume that means sister, etc. And then out is true friends, and then colleagues, and then the last one is, I don't know what this means, looky-loos. Does anyone, what does that mean? I assume
people that you just want to watch.
Okay, great. So those people. Oh, okay.
It comes from that.
Yeah.
Open house.
People who just come to
right?
Look and see what people's homes are.
Right. Okay. Or the, you know, the person.
And the people who slow down on the highway when they see that an accident has happened.
Okay, interesting.
Just looking.
I like yours today.
Yeah.
That's where I learned it from.
Okay. And so in any one of these cases, looky-loos is clearly like the least important people on this graph. And the two important principles are comfort in, dump out, which is so simple, but also like really intuitive and easily forgettable, right? Because often we find ourselves in this context that we're trying to help someone else. And it's a really fine line between what you're actually doing to comfort and what you're actually doing to dump your own mishigas on someone else, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I often check myself when I'm in the hospital with someone or when I'm at a Shiva. And I really have to like be aware, self-aware of, you know, am I here right now because I'm trying to make myself feel better? Maybe because I'm afraid of death. And so if I can make you feel a little bit better, maybe I won't have to go through it myself. Mm-hmm. There are all these like subtleties in our own inner psychology. And the principle here, I think, is so obvious but important to remind ourselves of, that whenever you're in a situation, you have to constantly ask yourself, and this is really important for visiting the sick, right? Everyone needs to dump, right? We all need to get over, we all need someone to tell our pains to, right? But you don't dump in, right? You dump one layer out. So the significant other dumps out to the friends to the looky-loos, right? But when you're trying to comfort, you always make sure that your comfort goes in and that you're not there to comfort yourself. You're there to comfort the person who's closer to the tragedy or to the illness than you are. And I think what halacha does so beautifully in this topic that we're about to start, which is visiting the sick, is that it really articulates this principle. Because you might say, like, I actually had a cousin of mine post online when I just mentioned on Facebook today that I was teaching this class, and a cousin posted, just follow your intuition. Well, sometimes your intuition gets a little, right, jumbled. Sometimes you lose kind of the sight of the difference between those two lines of comforting versus dumping. And what the halacha spells out beautifully is just how sensitive you have to be in all these different permutations of this mitzvah, of how to visit the person who's ill. And I think when it comes to understanding the beauty of Judaism and what the Torah has to provide us for in our lives in terms of being living better lives, we're going to see some amazing principles that you might have assumed, oh, I could have figured that out myself. But it articulates it so clearly that when you're going in to do this mitzvah, it's for the person you're visiting, right, and not for you. And so let's go and jump into the mitzvah of visiting the sick. Okay, so where's the origin of Bikur Cholim in the Torah? Where do we learn in the Bible itself the mitzvah to visit the sick?
Because of Abraham.
Great.
Where the angels came to visit him when he was circumcised. I'm not sure.
Great. Okay, that's where I was heading. That it's the visit of the angels to Abraham. We're going to see that according to some of the commentaries, it wasn't just the angels who visited Abraham. It was God himself, which is interesting. So we'll get there in a minute. The Talmud loves to ask these kinds of questions, right? We're heading, our next major holiday is Purim. So the Talmud asks, where do you find Esther in the Torah? Which is an odd question.
You don't.
Esther's not in the Torah. But the Talmud gives us a place anyways. And it quotes a verse in Deuteronomy that says, Anochi haster astir panai, I will surely hide my face. And so the word hiding, this is when God says, I'll get really angry at the Jewish people and I'm going to hide away and you won't know where I am. So that doesn't have anything to do with the Purim story on a surface level, right? But the letters for the word I will hide are the same as the letters for the word Esther. So the Torah says you find Esther in that verse. And there's a lot of philosophy behind it, right? Because what the whole book of Esther is about God being in hiding and finding him anyways.
Do you think really that you can really correlate what you see in the Torah and from what you read during the Purim?
I don't.
It's a midrash.
It's a midrash, yeah. So it's not the.
But if it's in, oh, the midrash is how it explains it, but.
Yeah.
So.
It's not the simple reading of the verse. Okay. There's an idea from Dr. Jacob Ellman. It's one of my favorite explanations of the Torah called omnisignificance, that every word of Torah has many, many different levels of meaning to it. So I think the simple level of that verse in Deuteronomy is it's not about Esther. Could there be some hidden meaning behind it?
Maybe.
Right? Maybe. That's what I tend to believe. That's a great question. Okay, but the Torah and the Talmud, sorry, really likes to find hidden references for different things in the Torah and the five books of Moses itself. So where do you find that? This is going to be the first source. I'm going to just paraphrase this source right now. Rish Lakish in the Talmud, this is source 2, asks, where do we find a remez, a hint, for visiting the sick in the Torah? And the hint comes from the story of Korach and his rebellion. So if we remember in the book of Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, Korach questions the leadership of Aaron and Moshe. Right, he says, Kola ida kulam toshim, right? The whole nation is holy, so why do you guys think you're in charge? And so there's this whole back and forth. Aaron ends up taking fire pans, and there's this kind of competition of whose offering is God going to really accept, and he accepts Aaron's. And what's the punishment for Korach and his 250?
They die.
Right, so they die.
The earth opens up.
Right, yeah. The earth opens up and swallows up Korach and his whole assembly. But before that, Moshe tells the nation that, you know what, I need to prove to you in this moment, right, that Hashem really chose Aaron and myself. Well, it's really God saying this. And how am I going to prove it to you? So there's this verse that says, if these men die the death of normal men, im kamot kol adam yumutun ela, if these men die the death of normal men, upugudat kol adam, with the visitation of normal men, then God has not sent me. Right? If they die normal deaths, then God hasn't sent me. And the Talmud picks up on this two words, upkudat kol adam, and if they have the visitation of normal men. So what's this visitation idea? And the Talmud says that what's this visitation? What Moshe is really telling them is, if they end up dying in the way, in the progression of that most people go through, which is what? A person falls ill.
Normal,
right. Person falls ill. Then people come to visit them. Then they die a natural death. If that happens in that order, right, then God didn't send me. And Talmud says, oh, you know what you see here? That the normal way of life is that when someone gets sick, people visit them. It's like just an offhanded kind of, it's an offhanded hint. It's a remiss. It's a hint to the idea. What some of the commentaries point out is it's fascinating that in this source, at least, the Talmud doesn't need to prove that there's an obligation. It's almost like presupposed that, of course, everyone's going to have people visiting them. It's like the Talmud is taking it for granted that Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, is so fundamental to who we are that it doesn't even have to be said explicitly. It can just be said in passing. And we all know it's important. Okay, great. That's one idea. I thought it was just an interesting source in and of itself. And there's probably something else on a deeper level to why those two kind of contexts are associated with each other. But here's another one, and this is nice for a few reasons, not the least of which is that it's also in Parshat Yitro. So Jerry started us off with Yitro. Now we're going to see another verse in Parshat Yitro. So if you look at source 3, chapter 18 of Shemot of Exodus, Yitro comes to Moshe, and like every good father-in-law, he has lots of advice for his son-in-law. Amazing. Right? He's got lots of things to tell him about how to succeed in the world. I adore my father-in-law. He's coming to visit us next week. Looking forward to all the great advice he has for me.
You want him to live with Yossi? He's got an extra apartment.
Yeah, all right. Cool. We'll see how the week goes.
See how much I can take. But
yeah.
They never say the degree of sickness that you have to, when you have to resupply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll actually get into questions about the degree of sickness when we get into like a deeper discussion in the post game in the halachic.
If Jeff is sneezing, I should go and visit him.
Right. Well, we saw a few weeks ago. Thank God this is not the case anymore. Sneezes used to be really serious.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We saw the midrash.
Sneezing
used to be.
Death or something? Because you hold your breath?
Gesundheit. So, right, Gesundheit, which means to your health. So there are all these variations. Without getting too off track, the Midrash says that before Yaakov, we saw this in the class we did on old age in Judaism, that before Yaakov prayed to God, according to the Midrash, that before he died he should get sick. And the Midrash says that before Yaakov had that prayer, people would just sneeze and immediately die. It was like not the kiss of death, but the sneeze of death. It was just this automatic thing. And therefore, God listened to Yaakov's prayer and allowed Yaakov to get sick, which is why at the end of Genesis, the first time you see chole, the word sick in the Torah, is when Yosef is called and said, Hine avicha chole, behold, your father is sick. And that was actually God, according to the Midrash, answering Yaakov's prayer that he should have time to speak to his children before he dies. So sickness is kind of viewed as a blessing in that way. Then the Midrash says, and nowadays we should say chaim every time someone sneezes.
Chaim,
to life, right? Because it used to be that sneezing was to death. So that's where all of these other things, labriut, right? Because it's gesund, or no, gesundheit, all come from that like idea in the Midrash.
That's where that comes from.
Yeah. Isn't that so interesting? Okay. Yeah. So we'll get into like the degrees of sickness. Sneezing is probably not enough to qualify. The Talmud, though, quotes this verse. So let's first read the verse that Yitro suggests to his son-in-law, to Moshe, which is, you should warn the nation V'hizharta etem et hachukim ve'et ha'torot. You should teach them or warn them about the laws and the Torahs, right, the wisdoms. V'hodata lehem et ha'derech yalchuba ve'et ha'ma'ase asher yasun. And you should teach them or inform them about the path that they should walk on and the action that they should act. So the question here is, like, this is very redundant, right? How many times does Yitro have to say, teach them the Torah? Like, how many ways can you find to say this one thing? Is it redundant? Or was Yitro actually communicating different ideas here? And so, again, the Talmud does what the Talmud always does, and it offers a midrashic interpretation. So we're going to read source 4 now. It's the bottom of the first page, going up to the second.
Yitro was really a priest.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he was well-versed in all kinds of different religions. How does he come to like the Torah?
Great. There's actually a midrash that talks about that.
I'm just curious.
That's a great question. So quickly, the midrash says that every single person in the world heard God taking the Jews out of Egypt and heard the splitting of the sea. And it was only Yitro who actually heeded the call and came to visit his son-in-law after that. So everyone actually was able to hear it. There's another midrash that says that Yitro tried all the different religions of the world and wasn't satisfied by them. So when he saw what God was able to do by taking the Jews out of Egypt, he actually heeded the call. Oh. So interesting. So let's read the Talmud in source 4. This is Bava Metzia 30b. Miriam, do you want to start us off?
As Rav Yosef taught in a baraita with regards to the verse, quote, and you shall teach them, that is referring to the structure of their livelihood. Example, teach the Jewish people trades so they may earn a living. The path, that is referring to the acts of kindness. They shall walk, that is referring to visiting the ill. Wherein, that is referring to burial, and the action, that is referring to acting in accordance with the letter of the law that they must perform. That is referring to the acting beyond the letter of the law.
Okay. So we have like 5 different pieces of this teaching. So it's not him teaching 5 different like forms of wisdom. It's really 5 different concrete things that Jews should learn how to do. And Yitro is giving this as advice to Moshe to pass on to the Jewish people. And the one I want to zoom in on tonight is where we get the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim from, according to this statement in the Talmud. So Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, comes from the word Yelchu, they may walk. So that's intuitive, right? Because how do you get to visit a sick person? You walk there, right? You're walking, you're heading in someone's direction. I think there's something a little bit beneath that, which is that it's the act of going itself that's the meaningful part. Right, and we'll get into like how do you perform the mitzvah according to our traditional sources, but the path itself is actually part of the mitzvah. It's the walking. The Talmud asks a fascinating question, which is, one second, you just told me that the thing Yitro said before he talked about visiting the sick, what was the thing in the Talmud right before that? Before visiting the ill, there was the third line right before visiting the ill.
The path that is referring to acts of kindness.
Okay. So what's our question here?
Is visiting the ill a kindness?
Great.
Yeah.
What's the difference between acts of kindness and visiting the ill? Hainuhach is an expression in the Talmud. It's the same thing. Right, so that's the Talmud's next question, the top of the next page.
What the path means?
So
the act of kindness?
The path, right, the derech, because he's expounding one phrase in that verse at a time. So the derech, the path, gemilut chasadim, general acts of kindness, right? Yelchu, walking on that path, is visiting the sick. Mm-hmm. And the Talmud wants to understand, this is Kirsten's question, right? It's the same thing, right? Visiting the sick is an act of kindness. So why do I need these 2 different expositions to learn both? Okay, and the fascinating answer in the Talmud, this is the top of the next page, which is that walking on the path, why do you need to walk on the path? We're going to get back to this later. This is the third line on the second side of the page. The Gemara answers. The reference to visiting the ill is necessary only for the contemporary of the ill person. So what does this mean? There's a special form of visiting the sick that doesn't apply to everyone. It applies to what the Talmud calls Ben Gilo. Ben Gilo. Gil in Hebrew means?
So happiness.
So Gila can mean happiness. That's true. I've never heard that. Actually, we're going to get back to that. That's bad. I didn't make that connection. Gil in modern Hebrew, right? Hagil Shili means my age, right? So the Talmud says that there's a general mitzvah subsumed under acts of kindness that everyone can visit the sick. And there's a special mitzvah for someone of the same gil, the same age as the ill person.
So contemporary.
A contemporary, right. Let me just finish the source. This is an important statement in the Gemara. So we're going to define what a contemporary means, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get there later. But then the Talmud says, what's so special about this? Why did you need that second expression in the Torah to teach you that there is a form of visiting the sick that's even greater than the general form of doing acts of kindness? Because if you are a Ben Gil, if you're of this, a contemporary, maybe of the same age as the sick person who you're going to visit, if you're able to do it right, no tell echad mishishim b'chol yo, that you take away from the sick person when you visit them 1/60th of their illness. That there's some metaphysical power to some people who visit the sick, that you actually make them, what would this be, like 0.1666% better? 60th. Whatever 1/60th is in decimal points, somewhere around that.
5%.
5%? 5% would be 80%, 7%. Okay, let's, okay. Right. 1/60th better. They're going to actually have some form of healing. Just like a fascinating...
So if you have 60 people visiting... they'll be completely cured?
I've heard that question asked before.
1%.
I guess...
It's 1%.
It's 1%?
Almost 1/60.
1.016.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have 1 divided by 60. As Jerry's looking it up, do we recognize that number anywhere?
Is that a
kosher?
Kosher
when you
stick something in its tray.
Yeah.
It goes into the pan. As long as it's 1/60.
Okay, so what's the decimal? What is it?
1/16 or
1/60? You're right.
Oh,
right.
60.
I told you it's
0.016666.
So it's 1.666%. I was right.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you were.
I got it. All right, you can take the accountants out of accounting. Right? You can't take accounting out of the account. My major is in accounting, so whenever I can remind myself that I still know how to do math, I'm happy. Okay, so the number 1/60th is significant because in the laws of kashrut, if you have a drop of milk fall into a pot of soup, of meat soup, if it's less than 1/60th of the volume of the soup, it is batel. It's as if it never was. It gets annulled.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually, technically, that's 1 out of 61. And this is just a slightly higher portion. This is a tiny bit larger than that. Mm-hmm. Right? This is 1 out of 60. So it's the smallest percentage in halacha that is still halachically significant. So you're going to make them a little bit, not all the way better, right? That's the impression here, but just enough that they can tell. So you're going to make them a little bit better. It's a beautiful image. Right? So to Jerry's point, is this right? Is this a literal expression that if you had 60 people, first of all, maybe you have to multiply 1.01666 times 1.01666 times 1.01666. That's past my level of math.
Maybe it depends on who the people are.
Maybe it depends. I'd say, like, if only people who are in need of recovery actually get 60 visitors.
No,
that
I mean,
would be...
they have to
visitors.
Be their contemporaries.
Okay, contemporaries. Right? So both Miriam and Allison are saying something similar, right? Maybe it depends who's actually going to visit. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll get there. But what we see here is that the power of Bikur Cholim, if it's under the right circumstances, right, can have a transformative, can really be transformative for the person who's being visited. Okay, and last but not least, right, Pauline said that the origin of visiting the sick in the Torah, right, comes from the moment where Abraham circumcised himself, right? God says, you should circumcise yourself and your child, so he circumcises Ishmael at 13 years old, and Abraham is how old? 99, I think, right? It's either 90 or 99 when he circumcises, I'm forgetting right now. And then this is source 5 that talks about what happens immediately after the circumcision. So, Jerry, do you want to read that for us in English?
It's number 5, the Lord appeared.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lord appeared to him by the terrified Beth of Mamre.
I'll just pause you there. The Hebrew word is Elohim Mamre. I would translate it as the plains of Mamre.
Plains of Mamre.
Yeah.
He was sitting at the entrance of the tent as the day grew hot. looking up, he saw three men standing near him. As soon as he saw them, he ran from the entrance of the tent to greet them and, bowing to the ground, he said, "My lords, if it please you, do not go on past your servant. Let a little water be brought, bathe your feet, and recline under the tree."
Okay, so what's going on here? So the simple reading is, it's a really hot day, so there are not a lot of visitors, right? Mm-hmm. We know in the Midrashic tradition, Avram and Sarah had a four-sided tent that was open on all sides. Mm-hmm. They were constantly welcoming in visitors. We're going to have a separate class on Hachnasat Arachin, the mitzvah of welcoming in guests. But the Midrash says that this happens 3 days after Avram's circumcision. And what's going on here? So we see two things in this verse. There's two visits that occur in this verse. Visit number one is God, right? The Lord appeared to Avram as he's sitting at the entrance of his tent, at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. And the second visit is
angels.
So, right. So we know that they're angels because of the Midrashic tradition, right? But the Torah, the literal text here, calls them anashim men, just three men traveling through. Okay, so what's the significance, according to the Midrash, that God visits Avraham on the third day? Yeah, Pauline.
Well, from what I learned also in Shechem, on the third day, he was the most ill from his circumcision.
Great.
And then he needed the most comfort.
So we actually have a tradition that the third day post-op is the most difficult day. It's actually something that you'll find in a bunch of Midrashim. This actually has halachic significance, that when surgery was a more dangerous affair than it is today, and some people even say today, there's a recommendation that you should not have surgery from Wednesday on, because that would mean that the third day is on Shabbat, and you don't want the most life-threatening day to be on Shabbat, when ideally you should avoid, if possible, try to avoid doing like other forms of medicine. So this actually is a pretty well-established pattern in Judaism, that the third day is particularly dangerous.
If you take it literally, if he was that sick, he couldn't run.
Okay.
He ran, right? If you saw him pain, you stay.
Yeah, great. So it seems like this, despite the fact that it's the worst day, that it's the most painful day or the most dangerous day, Avram still got up and started running and trying to take care of his guests. Despite that. Ramban, Nachmanides, has a beautiful read as to why God visits Avram after his circumcision on the third day. And this is going into the bigger question of what's the point of Bikur Cholim and visiting the sick in general, right? We remember that Pauline reminded us that this is the origin of visiting the sick. When we saw last time in the class we had on just doing good deeds in general, that we explained that doing chesed, doing acts of kindness, is being like God, right? Is walking in God's path. That was the Talmud. And the Talmud says, how do you walk in God's path? Right? God is a consuming fire. God burns you if you're too close. And so the Talmud's answer was, right, to walk after God's ways, to walk like God walks. And it gave a whole bunch of examples. And the example was, just as God visits the sick, and it quotes this verse, so too you should be visiting the sick. Okay, so that's the origin of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick, another origin in the Talmud, a possible origin. So we have to ask ourselves, if we want to be like God and we want to visit the sick, then we have to understand what is the purpose of visiting the sick. If we understand the purpose, then we can understand how to do it better. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, says, what's the purpose of God visiting Avram here? Just to give him some attention. Just to give him some company. It's a beautiful, it's like such a simple Ramban. I love this piece in Nachmanides when he's commenting. It's source 6. You can read it for yourselves later. I think it's a beautiful source. Ramban says that there are times, most of the time when God appears to people, there's some ulterior motive, right? God's either appearing to Moshe to say, Moshe, come on, teach them another mitzvah, right? Or to say, come on, guys, time to do tshuva, right? You've been messing up. Here's your last warning, right? Often when God shows up, he has some purpose involved. The Ramban says, why did God show up here? Just to say to Avram, I'm so happy you did a mitzvah. I'm so happy you, like...
So there's two reasons that we go to this.
Yeah.
Just for company, or one sixth, getting a little better.
Okay, so that, interesting.
Is that the two reasons?
I never thought that the reason to go is to make the person better. I think that's a consequence of what happens when you go. That's at least the way I think of it. So we're going to see in our sources, there's really three different paths or three different possible reasons for why we go, and it's really some combination of all three. So what we learn from God is to visit people just to be with them, just to enjoy their, so that they can enjoy some company. But there's value to that intrinsically of its in and of itself. The Ramban quotes...
Also distracted.
Great,
from
great.
The sickness.
Yeah, we'll see.
A little peace, or not think about what they're feeling because now they're entertaining or they're being entertained.
Yeah, so Rambam, Maimonides, wrote... Rambam was a doctor. And in addition to all of his halachic and philosophical texts, he actually—I didn't remember this. I was just reading about it today. Rambam actually wrote a treatise about how to do medicine, and in the middle of this treatise, the Rambam actually says how to visit the sick. And his recommendations are to play them music on instruments, play instruments for them, tell them funny stories, and tell them the news that's happening to distract them. Fascinating, right?
So, makes sense.
Yeah. And that's basically what Hashem's doing here, according to the Ramban. Just spending time with Avram, just hanging out. Okay, then Avram's second visit. Interesting, what's going on there? So this is, we're going to get there a little bit later, but I'll just hint to it now. There's a beautiful commentary I saw that said that why did these people show up? It's a little rude, right? If you're hanging out with God, and then these people show up, are you going to interrupt God? So we actually learned from that, that it's better to leave God in order to care for your guests. That so high of a mitzvah is welcoming in guests that you can abandon God for the sake of your guests. We'll get there another time. But a beautiful commentary I saw is that, you know what was the hardest thing for Avram after going through surgery? Was that he was deprived of the ability to do mitzvot. And he was just too tired, he couldn't do mitzvot. So God basically brought upon him these guests because the thing that was most painful for Avram was that he couldn't help other people. And so God gave him an opportunity to help other people. It's kind of God being in tune with what Avram's needs were and trying to meet those needs, which I thought was beautiful. Okay, so one reason that we visit the sick is just to give them emotional support, just to hang out, right? Watch some TV together, right? That's worthy on its own. The second, and this is pretty important, is that the point of visiting the sick has a lot to do with offering them spiritual support and comfort also. So there's just being, and then there's the spiritual side, which for us is an act of prayer. That no good visit is complete without davening on behalf of the person who you're visiting. So let's read this in the Rambam. It's verse 7. Pauline, do you want to read this for us?
Yes. When one comes to visit a sick person, he should not sit on a bed, nor on a chair, nor on a bench, nor on a high place, nor above the invalid's head. Instead, he should wrap himself in a talit, sit below his head, and treat God for mercy on his behalf, and depart.
Okay.
That'll make anybody well right away.
Right.
Wow. Either I'm going or I'm staying.
Yeah. What, you're saying this image of like someone showing up in a talis?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, is it okay if I turn down the heat? Is that right?
Yeah.
You guys know? Okay. Everyone okay if I turn off the heat? Okay. So, just interesting here. What's this idea with getting in a talit? I don't know about you. Does this remind you of another place that we put on a talit? It's almost like shul. It's like going on. What's going on? Yeah. What's going on here? Right. So the Talmud says, right?
So when you get married,
but it says don't even.
Yeah. Some people wear a talit when they get married.
What are you, stupid? Because it doesn't say you can't sit in a high place, you can't sit on a bench, you can't sit.
Yeah, so what's going on there?
So you wrap yourself in a talit and you crouch.
Okay.
No, you say pray for the person's will.
In order to pray. Okay, so what's going on here? So the Talmud says, and this is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, but not by Maimonides, that resting above the head of a sick person laying in bed is the Shechina, is God's divine presence.
Okay.
Where you find God in Shul. You find God at some auspicious moments, maybe at a wedding, right? Generally, we associate in cloaking yourself in a talit, right, is connected to finding God's presence. God is in the room with the sick person. And you
so
want to be respectful.
They're always high, the Shekinah is always high.
Right. So according to the Talmud, it's resting directly over the head of the sick person. So why do you crouch down, right? You crouch down because you don't want to sit higher than the Shekinah. In God's presence.
I see.
The post-scheme, I think the Aruch HaShulchan says that this was only, by the way, in terms of the crouching, you don't have to do that anymore, because this was only when sick people laid on the floor on some kind of cushion or pillow. But now that you have like hospital beds or people rest up, so you shouldn't sit above the headline of someone who's ill. But if they're raised up, you can also sit like at a respectful level. You don't have to go all the way down on the floor. Okay. Fascinating in and of itself.
Yeah.
But the Rambam says, he basically says the whole point of being there is in order, umevakish alav rachamim, so that you should pray for mercy for this person that you're visiting. And the Ramah, which is Rabbi Moshe Isserles, he's the Ashkenaz commentator on the Shulchan Aruch in the 1500s. He phrases it even more strongly. Terry, can you read for us source 8?
What? Who is it?
Terry and Jerry sound off. Sounds very similar.
Jerry.
Yeah. Good.
When he visited a sick person and did not pray for him, has not fulfilled the religious duty of visiting the sick.
Right. So the Ramah frames it very, very strictly. Mm-hmm. If you didn't daven, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So you can pick this apart and say, like, really? Like, what if you took out the trash? Like, what if you took out the, what if you fed them soup? Are you really going to say that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah? Okay, so there's some people who say maybe you didn't fulfill the mitzvah to its highest degree. But in any case, most of our commentaries say that an intrinsic part of Bikur Cholim is davening, and davening in the presence of a sick person. I'll actually say that this is the origin of Misha Berach. The original source of saying a prayer for someone who's ill comes from, you can read it for yourselves later, it's the Talmud and Baba Batra, source 9. We're going to skip it for now, but you feel free to read it later, where Rabbi Pinchas Bar Chama says that if you are in the house of a sick person, you should go and find the chacham, like the sage or the Torah scholar of the city, and ask them to pray on behalf of the sick person. Mm. It's something part of the mitzvah of caring for the sick is actually davening on their behalf, and from there emerged the idea that you'd have the rabbi say a prayer, right? From there emerged the idea that you say the prayer during the services when the rabbi's there. And that's where nowadays when we say Misha Berach during the Torah service, it emerged actually out of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick. Because connected with visiting the sick is praying for the sick. So now you have to ask a real life question, which is, I can only imagine if someone came to my bed and started just shuckling back and forth, it's like the kind of intense Hasidic bowing, and like davening, and they're wrapped up in the tallis, and like they're not stopping, and it's 2 hours of Tehillim. I might think, like, my gosh, this person thinks I'm going to die, right?
Yeah,
that's right?
True.
He's
predicting.
Right.
I would feel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real, like,
scary.
It's scary. Yeah. So here's just a beautiful example of where the halacha's primary concern is the feelings and the well-being of the person who's sick, and many rabbis say that if the person is going to get freaked out, don't daven so long. Right? Make it a quick one. I had a teacher in yeshiva, and I quoted it here, the head of the yeshiva I went to in Israel, Rabbi Aaron Bina, he has a very thick Israeli accent, and he used to tell us whenever there would be a student leading the services who took too long, he'd sometimes scream at it and said, "As God is getting bored! God's getting bored with your davening." He had this very high pitch. He has this very high pitch voice. And there's actually like a tradition about this that if you have to be sensitive to the needs of the person you're visiting, and if they're going to be either insulted or if they're going to think that you davening long is an indication of how serious their illness is, you should make it a short one. Some posts can even say that the two words refuah shlema, may you have a complete recovery, actually counts. Most people assume that you need a little bit more than that. So here's these are commonly accepted phrases that you can say if you're visiting a sick person. So this is the top of the third page, I believe. So hamakom yishlach lecha refuah shlema, may God send you a complete recovery. Or hamakom yirpecha refuah shlema b'toch shar chaliyav Yisrael, may God heal you with a complete healing among all those Jews who are sick, all the sick of Israel. So these are one-liners. And sometimes a one-liner is better, right, than a long prayer. And it's up to the visitor, right, to have that sensitivity. Am I davening long, right, because I'm trying to comfort? Or am I davening long because I have, like, this internal anxiety about mortality? And I'm just trying to, like, dump in instead of dump out. I think there's something to that.
This little side note, when I was in the hospital, Wendy from our synagogue, she's a nurse at Summit.
Yeah.
She was not my nurse, but she saw Joanne one day and she said, "Why are you here?" Da, da, da. So it was a Friday and she came into my room. She said, "Would you like to make kiddush?" And she brought wine and she brought a little bread. And I said, "I'll say the prayer. You can cut the hall." And we had a little, I thought it was really nice.
Wow.
You know, so.
Who was it?
That was
Wendy, she's a convert from our synagogue, the Chinese girl. I don't know if you know her. So she's a nurse at Summit. So she came in, we made Kiddush together. And there was another rabbi, a rabbi that goes around that every Friday brought me the little candles.
Yeah.
And so I had so many candles, I said, "Please, to Joanne, no more candles."
Right.
Every Friday she came in, and she was very nice.
Yeah.
She traveled to the different hospital.
She's an amazing person. And
you know her?
Yeah, I know. I know her well. So that's just a beautiful example of how, you know, spiritual care can be, I think, so deeply comforting.
That's good.
Awesome. Joanne, I think you or Joanne had mentioned that to me. It's beautiful. And so part of the purpose, one of the purposes of visiting the sick is to daven with them, is to offer them spiritual comfort. And a third, and this is something I think, Miriam, you alluded to this before, that the Aruch HaShulchan, which is an important commentary on the Code of Jewish Law, says, this is source 10. Kirsten, do you want to read it for us?
The foundation of the mitzvah of visiting the sick is to look into what their needs are and do for them what they need. This might be the reason that God sent Abraham men.
Okay, so we'll get those were my words at the end. But the Aruch HaShulchan basically says that, you know how you do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? When you go to a sick person's house, look in the fridge, right? Open the fridge, see if they need some milk, right? Check the trash, see if it needs to be cleared, right? Practical stuff that they cannot do for themselves or to make their lives easier. And he says, in Hebrew, he says it's the ikar, it's the essence of the mitzvah. It's the most important part. There are others who would say that, no, praying is the most important part. In any case, right, these three components come together. Right? That to really do the mitzvah in the best way possible, you have to think about three needs of the person you're visiting. Right? Their emotional needs. Do they just want someone to shoot the breeze with? Right? Maybe just watch TV? Right? Maybe talk about the news? Right? There's lots of things to stress about in the world today outside of this person's health problems. Right? That's sometimes a good distraction. Then there's the component of prayer, which can be incredibly meaningful, but also has to be done sensitively, right? So that you don't do it in a way where you're scaring the person or you're making them uncomfortable. Right? You can imagine if there's a child who doesn't understand the extent of their illness, right? You want to make sure that you do it in a way in which they don't feel overwhelmed. So sometimes you can just tell them, you know, would you like to say a chapter of Tehillim with me, a chapter of Psalms with me, and we'll say it together. But there are nice, sensitive ways to do that. And sometimes it's just a one-liner. May God. I will pray. I'm praying to God that He offers you a complete recovery.
I think that's really nice.
Yeah. And then the last one is just taking care of their physical needs. That's what I was alluding to before. That one of the commentaries I saw is that when Avraham meets God after his circumcision, God sent these men so that Avraham had something to do. God sensed that what does Avraham really need in that moment? Avraham was just dying to do a mitzvah. So God sent him a mitzvah. And those were the three men. A nice reading in that. Okay. So next up, because there's a bunch of pieces here. So who should do the visiting in Bikur Cholim? Should everyone make visits? Right? So remember we saw before that generally there's a broad mitzvah of doing nice things for people. But then there's a special mitzvah of Bikur Cholim that we said is Ben Gilo. Is someone at the same Gil? So, which is a wild, like, what does that really mean? And the Talmud said that, you know, who can take away 1/60th of the illness? It's that Ben Gilo, someone of the same age, ilk, right? So, three basic approaches to what that means. One is, and I think this is the most interesting one for the mystics among us, someone who shares the same zodiac. That was interesting. That maybe this is some kind of, like, mystical horoscope thing. Okay, not my cup of tea in the world. Rashi, or at least... something that's interpreted as Rashi, says that is actually someone of the same age. You know why? Because if you're around the same age,
you understand them better.
Right, you know what they're going through, right? If a 50-year-old's visiting a 15-year-old in the hospital, right, can they really relate to that form of illness? But that's a different kind of pain and suffering than a 20-year-old visiting an 80-year-old, right? There's different kinds of experiences of illness in the world. And the best kind of Bikur Cholim is someone who can really empathize. Another answer, the Ritz in the Shita Mekubetzet says that it's actually just what Gilo means here is someone whose personality matches, right? If you have a real like introvert who likes a quiet conversation, don't send them the loudest person in town to go visit them. There's something about matching personalities that you want it to, if you want it to be a comfort. And
that's where the horoscope comes in.
Okay, yeah, so maybe it's like about matching up. I really don't know how horoscopes work, to be honest. So
that's why you put a question mark.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to quote it because I thought it was interesting. There's something about matching up temperaments.
Yeah.
And the thing the Ramak quotes, which I think is fascinating, this is Rabbi Moshe Israel, source 11. Yeah. To take that to a more extreme case, the Ramak asks a question. Are you allowed to go visit your enemy when they're sick?
No.
No? Why not?
They might think you're taking pleasure.
You make them sicker.
Okay. So you'll make them sicker? Allison says they might think you're taking pleasure in it. Right? Does anyone think yes?
I would say yes.
Yeah?
Because it might be a good time to make peace.
Yeah.
I wish you well.
Yeah. Maybe it's a good time to apologize. Mm-hmm. It's actually a debate. Isn't it amazing that this is that we have halachic responses that discussed and argued about this? It's the Ma'aril, I think the 12th century German, German rabbi said that it's bad. Just go to see your enemy. Tell them you hope they feel better. And then the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Israelist, quotes the opinion, and this is source 11, that he disagrees. He says, this does not seem plausible to me. But he should not visit a sick person nor comfort a mourner whom he hates, so that the latter should not think that he rejoices at his misfortune and therefore feel depressed. Allison, that's, I think, exactly what Allison said, right? If I don't think I have any real enemies in life, but if I were to have an enemy and then I show up at the hospital, they might think like he's coming to like, you know, he's happy. He's like wishing. What's it like? Swim with the fishes.
He wants to make sure that you're going to be gone.
Right. You know, I'm like having all these images. I don't know why, but I like superhero movies and TV shows. So you know, in like a bunch of these superhero movies, like you know the Kingpin or like the kind of antagonist figure shows up at the hospital bed and you know brings a rose and it's like the you know the seal of death. Mm-hmm. That's what they're gonna think. Yeah. So the Ramah actually recommends. He brings both opinions, and he recommends against visiting them. And I saw later commentaries say that it's all a matter of scale. None of these questions are absolutes, right? You have to take, everything is a case-by-case example.
That's on the circumstances.
Right.
Of what, why is your enemy, because he wants you, he promised to have you killed, or did you just have a fight, and
yeah.
He refuses to say that he's wrong?
So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. He says that there's different kinds of enemies, and each one has to be treated individually. It's just like fascinating. So it's kind of a non-answer at the end of the day, but the fact that these considerations are being thought of, I think, is like helpful, you know, for us to evaluate it. Right? Sometimes it's just saying like, I took the first place in line 5 years ago. Right? That might be different than like, I'm sorry that I like, you know.
Cheated you out of all your well.
Yes, that would probably be a different one. There's an interesting parallel in the laws of Lashon Hara, of speaking ill against others. Speaking ill against others, the postgame discussed, should you say sorry to someone who you gossiped against?
If they don't know it, you mean?
Right, so then there's that other factor, right? Maybe they don't know it. And some of the rabbis say that there's this kind of mashal parable that's given about speaking Lashon Hara, that someone goes to a great rabbi and says, you know, I feel terrible. I said something bad about you 5 years ago. I'd like your forgiveness. And the great rabbi says, okay, you know, I'll forgive you on one condition. go to the top of a mountain, take a pillow, and explode the pillow, and then come back to me. So the person does, and he comes back, and the rabbi says, okay, now I'll forgive you if you go and collect every feather from the pillow. And the person says, that's impossible. How can I possibly get every feather? And the rabbi responds, well, that's the exact same thing as speaking ill against someone. Because once you say it, you have no control over who it's going to pass on to. You have no way to rectify for what you did wrong. And there are actually some rabbis who say that because of that, if there's really no way to rectify for what you did wrong, sometimes it's actually better not to even say sorry in the first place, because you're just going to bring up this pain that you have no ability to make better. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a fine line between the two.
Is that the time and the place to actually, when you're visiting somebody, to ask teshuva from that?
They say around the holidays.
It's not the time and the place to.
Right.
It may be, but.
You know what I saw? One interesting suggestion was that instead of going over unasked, that you first call up the person and you say, you know, hey, I'd like to stop by, but only if it's okay with you.
Or ask a third party.
Ask a third party, right. There are ways to go about it, because you don't want to, especially when someone's physically weak, you don't want to bring up, an open wound that hasn't been healed.
Exactly.
So I think there is something to that, right? There's two sides to this coin. Okay, so that's a question of who should visit, which we're answering all these questions with non-answers, but I think there's something valuable to just thinking out the questions. When to visit. So here's something where the halachic tradition actually has very specific indications. So I'm going to paraphrase this for you. We're almost at the end of our time, so I'm going to go through quickly. The Shulchan Aruch codifies a bunch of statements in the Talmud. Here's what it says. When a person gets ill, the first 3 days, the only people who should visit them are their closest friends and family. First 3 days. Day three and on, the broader community can start visiting. Okay, so where's that coming from? What's going on beneath that? That's if you want to look it up later, it's source 12, the first box. What might be the logic behind that? That day one through three is about...
You might not make it past the third day.
So you might make it... Okay. What's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch says, is if it seems like you're not going to make it after the third day, past the third day, then everyone should come all at once. But if it only seems like a reasonable illness, then days one through three... should be immediate close family, and then past that should be everyone.
Well, you're the most out of it the first 3 days.
Okay, so there's something intuitive, right? Going back to the thing with Avraham, right? The first 3 days are the hardest days, so maybe it's harder for you to receive visitors, right, on those first 3 days. This is going back to the intuition, right, that when you go visit, are you really helping? Are you really comforting the sick person? Or are you just making it harder with your visit? Sometimes visiting someone who's not up for it can actually be a burden on them, can make it harder for them. So maybe the first 3 days are too difficult. I saw something else, which is that if the person knows this law about the first 3 days, right? If you then go visit them during the first 3 days, they might think that you think that they're dying. Right? Which is just fascinating, interesting kind of... Right, but I think there's something intuitive here that even if nowadays we don't like see any correlation that, you know, if you make it past the 3 day mark for every condition, then, you know, you're likely to kind of make it through the illness. But I think there's something intuitive that we should still try to practice here, which is that, you know, this is again the idea of like the circles, right? The concentric circles, right? The real beginning is for the immediate family and support system. And then the wider community slowly but surely steps in. We have a similar principle. We'll talk about this with comforting mourners. There's a similar principle about when to pay a shiva call, right? Maybe the very beginning. Again, nowadays it's harder to necessarily apply this in all situations, because what if someone only has one shiva call? But maybe the visiting on day seven is not like visiting on day one, and people can be thoughtful about when am I going to go visit. There's something to that. So that's the first one. The second one, the Talmud has this just fascinating suggestion, which is that you shouldn't visit the sick person in the first 3 hours of the day or the last 3 hours of the day. Visit them in the middle 12 hours. So what are hours here? Hours are taking sunrise to sunset and dividing them by 12. That's the way that a Jewish hour works. It's either dividing the night by 12 or the day by 12. Before I get there, actually, the first 3 days again, like everyone visiting after the first 3 days, saw a beautiful commentary which is that why does everyone else have to visit after the first 3 days? Because the family's starting to get burnt out, right? At the beginning, the family's really in and taking care of it, but eventually they need some help too, right? And so that's why you wait for a little bit before you go in. I thought that was really meaningful. Okay. So what about... Yeah.
A lot of people don't know these rules.
Yeah.
I didn't
know these rules either.
But
yeah.
Sometimes, logically, you think it through, and that's what you probably do automatically anyways.
Right. I think that's one of the beautiful parts of this. So much of this is intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
If you really thought about it, you'd probably come up with it. The problem is that, I don't know about you, I don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I often shoot from the hip, right? And sometimes the sentiment is there, I want to do good, but sometimes I'm dumping in more than I'm comforting in.
Mm-hmm.
And the same idea applies there. So next idea in the Shulchan Aruch itself, and this is codified, it's from the Talmud, but it's codified in the Code of Law, is not to visit the first 3 hours of the day and the last 3 hours of the day. Okay, why? So the Shulchan Aruch's interpretation of this, it might be based on the Gemara, is that a person, a sick person, ends up getting worse and worse. Like their condition appears worse as the day goes on. I think there's something to this. Like often people feel better in the mornings and then in the afternoons feel a little bit more worn out or tired. And so why is that a problem? Because if a person visits in the morning, the first 3 hours of the day, they're going to see this person. They say, oh, he's about to be, you know, he's going to be playing basketball soon, right? She's going to be back on her, you know, back on her feet in no time. And because of that, you're not going to pray enough for them because they're not going to seem, it's not going to seem serious enough. And similarly, at the end of the day, the person might seem so sick that you're basically going to give up from praying at all. So you're going to think it's like it's the end, God forbid. So therefore, go in the middle of the day when their condition is just about average and reflective. Fascinating. The Rambam quotes the idea of not visiting in the morning and the night, but he doesn't give that kind of interesting idea about like it's going to affect how you pray or don't pray. Some people interpreted the Rambam that might be thinking, you know, the morning and the night, this is also the intuitive approach, that's when people have their close friends and family around. But in the middle of the day, right, people are busy. People might be at work. So when's the most effective time to go visit? Right, when no one else is around. So go in the middle of the day. Don't go in the morning. Don't go at night. I thought that was great. And then last but not least, the Shulchan Aruch says that, you know, there's some people who are just better off not to step into their room. People who have stomach issues, right, so it would be embarrassing for them if you go in and then they can't control their bowel, right? He says people have migraines,
mm-hmm.
right? Some people are, you have to actually think and evaluate based on this person's condition, is my presence in their room going to make them feel better or going to make them feel worse? And it's not an objective standard, right? For some people, being in their presence is actually going to make them less comfortable. They give it a recommendation is if you think that this person is not going to be comfortable with your presence, the Shulchan Aruch actually recommends go to their house, stand outside their room, just kind of whisper to them, I'm here, I'm thinking about you, I'm going to pray for you. Just say something quick and then leave. Such a nice thought, right? I got a recommendation in rabbinical school. In general, because there's a question about non-responsive patients. Right? What if someone's in a coma? God forbid. Right? What if you're visiting a baby in a NICU? Baby doesn't know that you're there. Right? So what do you do in those circumstances? First of all, I think I've learned this recently. Fran Kay does this amazing mitzvah where she goes to the NICU and just cuddles babies that are often, they're often either, some of them are in hospice. There's NICU hospice, which is just terrible. There are babies going through withdrawal symptoms because their mothers were drug addicts, and she just cuddles the babies. So I think there is something to that touch, right? Even if, like, the baby cognitively is not going to remember that. But I think that's beautiful in and of itself. And I saw that, and this is actually an advice I was given when I was first a rabbi, that if you're visiting someone who has cognitive decline or something, even if they don't know that you're there, leave a card saying that you visited. So I heard a rabbi mentor of mine said, leave a business card. And so I don't do this all the time. Because even if they don't know that you were there, their family appreciates that you visited. If you leave a card, the next time a family member visits, they'll see that the rabbi was there. They'll see that someone visited. Leave a feel better card. Leave a balloon. Right? Leave some flowers. Write it down. It's also, by the way, I think there's research that shows that in medical settings, when the caregivers see that there are people visiting, the level of care often goes up. Mm-hmm. So I think just practically that's not a bad idea also. So that was a trick I got. Like sometimes I'll write a letter on the back of a business card and say, you know, I'm thinking of you. And even if they don't know it, the family knows it, and that brings comfort to the family also, that often in those cases are the ones who are suffering the most. Okay. There's not a lot of time, but it's just interesting that there are stipulations for what to do when you're visiting people who are very sick, or maybe, God forbid, terminal, right? So one is there's a minhag, there's a custom to, when you're praying for them, to also change their name. So if you want to read this on yourselves, you'll see it in Source 13. This is Source 13, that you add a new name to the person's Hebrew name. So often you'll see in these cases, you'll hear names like Chaim, Rifaela, like from May God Heal. Right? There's a kind of a series of these names that are all indicative of some kind of healing or life. Chaya would be another example in the feminine.
Isn't Gabriel also one?
So Gabriel is at one of the ministering angels. I think it's often Raphael that would be used more. Because Raphael is a ministering angel, but it also means may God heal. From the expression Rafua, or Rofe, is a doctor. So Raphael is Raphael, that God will heal. And so there's a custom, if someone's very ill, we don't do this easily, to go up in shul and to give them a new name. I'm not going to use anyone's name here, but you'll basically add a name to the patient as a way.
What about their name?
Well, it becomes their halachic name. It becomes their Jewish name for the rest of their lives. If they recover, they keep that name.
Yeah, they do, but is it given by the rabbi only, or anybody can just do that?
In theory, anyone can do it, which is interesting. And so there's a ritual for how to do it, and be happy to talk more. It's basically a new form. It's a new kriyat shem. It's a new naming. And the idea from it is this sentence in the Talmud that shinui shem, that changing someone's name can change their mazal, can change their
luck.
Yeah, their luck, whatever that means.
It says in the synagogues.
Yeah, so it's often done in shul. Mm-hmm. The tradition is to do it during the Torah service, but it could be done other times too. And lastly, and I think this is important, in Source 14, there's actually, again, in the right circumstances, there's a mitzvah to talk to a person about settling their affairs. That if it's done in a sensitive way, right? There's a mitzvah to talk about, you know, have you written a will? What's your medical directive? Right? What are your wishes? If you were to want, you know, would you want certain kinds of treatment? Would you not want other kinds of treatment? That's actually like, that could be a zchut, that could be a merit and a real mitzvah in those, you know, in cases of significant illness. It's something that, again, has to be done really sensitively. And if you're worried that it's going to impact a person's mental health or maybe even their ability to recover, then you have to be really careful about how you say it. But those are important discussions. I think we've learned a lot in terms of there's important halachic decisions and there are halachic restrictions on what options are or are not available to someone at their end of life. But having an open and honest discussion, sometimes with a rabbi, it could be a very helpful piece of the puzzle of helping someone feel better, even if there's not going to be a long-term recovery. So how often to visit? One of the last ones. So we know that we saw this last time. Visiting the sick is one of the mitzvot that says ein la shiur. There's no limit to it. You can't define its portion, its time quantity. So that can sometimes mean, and the Shulchan Aruch says this, that even if you visited once in a day, it doesn't mean you can't visit twice. There's something, in theory, if you had all the time in the world, you could visit as many people as many times as you could. I know, Jeff, you do this with your Meals on Wheels. I think that's an example of it. And there'd still be more mitzvahs to do. On the other hand, sometimes there's actually a mitzvah to not stay so long. Right? Ein la shiur, it has no quantity, goes both ways. Right? You could do it as much as you want and there'd still be more to do, but also sometimes even a 1 second visit, right? I'm thinking of you, I hope you feel better, I'll be davening for you, you know, have a good day, that's also worthwhile. I was thinking about an expression from Ernie Hollander. Alam Hashalom, right? Thank you for coming. Thank you for going.
I see that.
So this is beautiful. I saw this from the Brisker Rav, one of the Salvagics. If you go back to Maimonides on page, now I have to find it. Rambam on page 2, I believe. It's source 7. Look at, if you're able to look at the Hebrew, look at the Hebrew. So the Rambam here defines, this is source 7, I think it was on page 2. Does everyone have it?
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the last word in the Rambam? This is the Rambam codifying the mitzvah of visiting the sick person. So he says, right, the last word is mivakesh alav rachamim, pray for their recovery, and yotze. And the Brisker Rav said that part of the mitzvah of visiting the sick is knowing when to leave.
Yeah.
Is knowing that, because we have a tradition in studying Rambam Maimonides that he was very precise in every single word. So he wouldn't have put in that word if he didn't feel like it was part of the mitzvah. Is knowing when to leave. And that's a really important one. I'll leave some other questions for another time, but I'll finish with source 16. Where the Talmud says that kol ha-mevaker t'chole nitzol midina shel gehenom. Rav says in the Gemara, whoever visits the sick is saved from the judgment in Gehenom. Is that hell? Is that purgatory? I mean, we're not going to get into, you know, what happens after this world. But there is something powerful about visiting the sick that not only does it heal the sick person, right? That's what we started with, it takes off a 60th of their illness, but it also has some powerful effect on the visitor, that it helps their fate in life, or maybe in the world after this life. And I think this is something we believe in general, that it really reflects itself in this mitzvah very clearly. So that we believe that mitzvot make us better people. It might not be the only reason we do them, but we believe that the framework of God's Torah is that when we do them, we learn how to be more empathetic. We learn how to control our tavot, our temptations, right? We work on our ability to think about others and to control ourselves. And I can't think of a mitzvah more powerful than Bikur Cholim, than caring for the ill, that really forces us to think about these questions of how can I really be an empathetic human being? How can I really think when I'm going into that person's room, right, am I doing this for them? And if so, how long, you know, what time of the day do I come, right? And what do I do when I'm there? Am I stocking their fridge? Am I taking out the trash? Am I sitting with them and saying Tehillim? Am I just watching some TV with them? It's so much of this, as we've already seen, is you have to do what makes them feel good, right? You have to do what's right for them. And I can't think of another mitzvah. Well, there are a few mitzvah I can think of, but this is certainly one of them that in a deep way helps us flex those muscles of what it means to think about others before ourselves and really be a refined human being in the way that we care for others.
Very good.
Thanks. Have a good night, everyone. Yeah.
That's all you have to say.
Yeah. That's all you have to say. All right.